and welcome to the 13th instalment, unlucky for some but not us, of this exciting series of shows sponsored by Dublin City Comics and Collectibles, where we, the Full Force, take an in-depth look at the old Action Force comics in no particular order. We are currently making our way through the first Action Force mini-comics in this special sub-series of shows, easy for me to say, and now we get to the fourth of five issues. I am Chris Dragon McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and joining me on this new episode, as always, is Brian Dragon Socks Hickey. So let's get on with it, shall we? Mini Explosion.
For this episode, we dive into the fourth mini comic with our Q4 centered story entitled Peril at Dragon Rocks. Originally published in 1983 and presented free with battle number 434.
Credits include writer, uncredited, possibly Jerry Day. Artist, uncredited. Letterer, uncredited. Colours, uncredited.
The cast: Q-Force Commander Jamie Hugh McLaren, codename Leviathan. Sonar Officer Patrick Liam O'Flaherty, codename Phones. Aqua Trooper Jean-Paul Reeves, codename Shark.
For the Red Shadows, Red Shadow Troops, Red Shadow Frogmen.
For the vehicles, Q4 Swordfish.
And for the Red Shadows, Junks. And I just mean the boat, not like, you know, junk.
Story synopsis. A mysterious Mayday message draws a Q-Force team consisting of Leviathan, Phones, and Shark in the Swordfish to the China Sea, due south of a rock formation called Dragon Rocks.
It's a trap. I'm just going to say that now. Obviously, it's a trap. I mean, they're called on this, like, mysterious, like... they get this mysterious message, and it's like, why... get the f***ing Coast Guard out there. You know what I mean? If it's, like, a Mayday, just get the Coast Guard out there. Why are Q-Force dealing with it? It's amazing.
It's a good one. Obviously, en route, McLaren explains why the region is called Dragon Rocks. So it gets its superstitious names from the rock formations which resemble the scaly back of a dragon. And of course, that comes up again towards the end of this issue.
Leviathan dives to the sea floor in search of the ship that they fear sunk when it crashed into the rocks, and while he is underwater, the Red Shadows appear in Junks, not their junk, using a boom net to stop them from escaping the ambush at the other end of the rock formation and attack.
To be fair to the Red Shadows, this is a way better ambush than the ones in Desert Victory.
Yeah.
So they don't need to wear disguises here. I mean, they're hiding up in the rocks. I don't really know where they've hidden their junk, but presumably it's behind the rocks.
But also, I suppose, like, Junks, they're not that. You're not kind of cruising up to them thinking, oh, uh-oh, we've got some Junks up ahead. You're probably thinking, oh, it's just a couple of Junks up ahead. So that it's an inconspicuous vehicle for them. So I understand, yeah, you're right. It's a much better ambush plan than just putting loads of gear over loads of gear and expecting to be hidden, you know, in good time. And also, and course, we get another bloody battle cry. We get blood for the Baron again. So I'm guessing early on it wasn't necessarily, I mean, it was blood for the Baron, they're still saying that, but there's all this kind of like extra stuff they throw in there, which is I find quite odd.
Maybe it's because, you know, and we're just totally speculating here, but maybe it's because the writers and the creative team were still trying to get a feel for this new property.
Yeah. It's more dramatic as well, I suppose, isn't it? It's like, you know, the exclamation of blood and then blood for the Baron. There's power behind it, I suppose.
Yes, definitely enhanced drama, 100%. While underwater, McLaren identifies an old Japanese oil tanker that sank during the Second World War and surmises that the fuel can be used as a weapon if he can turn the rusted valve to release petrol into the water.
I love the art on this particular issue more than I think all the other issues combined, just because you get these really cool underwater, eerie kind of scenes. And that one where you've got this tanker just absolutely dwarfing Leviathan and all the little fish knocking about, and that one fish that's kind of like hiding in the seaweed and stuff is just brilliant. It's probably more like coral, but I do love that particular panel, or those particular panels of McLaren underwater. They're just gorgeous.
That is, I mean, the artwork on this is magnificent. And again, you know, it's to pay tribute to the brilliant work that all of these artists were doing back back in the '80s.
Yeah,
you know, they're working with, you know, pen and paper, paint and paper, like there's nothing digital here, and they're able to create masterpieces in these effectively tiny panels. It's a beautiful work, and as you say, that sense of scale of Leviathan standing on the ocean floor and being completely dwarfed by this wreck. I mean, it's a magnificent piece.
I love the colours. I love that blue and the green that they used, almost like a, you know, in the distance, to make it like, you know, basically to tell you this is not out, this is not on the surface, etc., etc. And those kind of like almost cloud-like flashes across the page, which denote current and wave and water and stuff. It's just really cool.
Lovely touches, yes, absolutely.
Leviathan is attacked by Red Shadow Frogman and uses his diving helmet to cause damage and keep them at bay. The Frogman, man.
They are absolutely fantastic.
Did we see them in the first ever episode we did? Or was it the second one, Sea Fury?
Well, I think the first one we covered, I think, was Sea Fury. And they did have Red Shadow Frogman in that. But we've never seen one before as close up and as detailed and in colour as we're seeing here in this particular panel.
Yeah, and quite interestingly, this would have been the first time in real life back in the day that these were seen, because this is in the mini comics before the battle became Battle Action Force. So that's quite cool that they were already like doing the Frogman, and then in the first, almost the first story we covered in Sea Fury, which would have been a few, you know, months like afterwards, they return again. So it's clear that the Frogmen were like it was a good foil for Q-Force, and I suppose they needed to have that, just as the Space Force guys needed Red Shadow astronauts.
That's right. I mean, that must have been a real challenge for the writers and artists, because the Red Shadows, while it's an amazing character design, you know, based off the German stormtrooper, it doesn't lend itself for anything other than kind of on land battles. So when you need to get into the water or get up into space, the creative teams at IPC Comics had to invent other kind of factions within the Red Shadow organization. And I think they did a superb job with both the Frogmen and the Red Shadow astronauts. I just want to go out on a limb here, just looking at the face on Leviathan here in this particular panel.
Yeah.
There's something about the illustrative style here that reminds me of, I think it's Patrick Kennedy. He would have worked for IPC Comics at the time.
Oh, right.
He worked a lot on Eagle and Dan Dare.
So you're thinking, yeah, actually, you're right. It's got a very Dan Dare vibes, that face, hasn't it?
So I'm just, you know, totally going out on a limb here, and probably, you know, Action Force fans out there know way more about this stuff than I do. But if I had to hazard a guess, based on this panel here, I'd be weighing in with that it's Patrick Kennedy.
That's a very good shout, actually. But I'm sure people, well, I hope people will tell us. Go ahead. You know, we're more the merrier. We like the information, and then we can pass it on as the real info.
McLaren successfully opens the valve, and the petrol is released into the water at an alarming rate. He resurfaces and instructs phones to light the fuel on fire.
Very harmful to the environment, this plan.
The things were pretty desperate here, like, so
all that sea life I was discussing before, probably all dead now, isn't it?
Oh god,
all that coral is now like charred, or like the tank has probably gone up as well.
Dear. It's I don't know, he's so happy to set it on fire.
I know, his face, man, he's like beaming, isn't he? I find it funny that McLaren was able to resurface with Red Shadows attacking him and get out of the diving suit whilst fighting. I find, considering what it takes to get into that bloody thing, it, like, you know, you saw him like getting set up by the other guys who were helping him out before, and you know, like, that's the diving suit, like that diving suit in particular is really like a five-man job to kind of get into.
Yes.
And in real life. And the fact that he just kind of hops out of it whilst beating up Red Shadows is just hilarious to me.
Testament to his absolute skill. I mean, in fairness, when we were back in the jungle with Eagle, the story unfolds in a way that he's able to use his jungle skills to defeat the enemy.
Yeah.
And it's done in a way that's kind of believable. But clever. So the writer on this particular sequence, maybe we say they took some liberties. That's all we say.
Well, I mean, I like that you mentioned that they use his skills in the Eagle episode, in the Eagle issue. And it's the same thing here, like the fact that his diving and getting underwater, that is the turning point for the battle, is that he is doing his specialism and able to, you know, find the only weapon available to them to fight off the Red Shadows. So it's kind of like, it always highlights the team's special skills. I don't really know what Skip was doing, because all he did, I suppose, was direct the shadows to the quicksand, because like that, Wheels didn't know what was going on. Skip had to work that plan out. So I suppose his tactical awareness is on show particular issue. And then in this one, McLaren's diving skills, in Eagle's case, it was about escape and evasion, and then obviously the jungle combat. So yeah, everyone's being kind of shown to you know, be like their specialist basically. And I suppose we'll see what Sky Raider's capable of in the last episode, in the last issue. And also one thing I do want to mention is, the because the designs for Q-Force are all very similar, when they're in their standard garb, they're all very similar. It's really important, and I suppose you could say it was the same for SAS Force, to get name checked on a constant and regular basis, and to also have different international stereotypes about certain characters, like the way they speak, so that you know that it's phones and so on and so forth. So I think that's really important, when all the characters look very similar, that they have those differentiating kind of elements to them.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's one of the things that they do quite well, worked into the dialogue, that they're always addressing, you know, who they're addressing. And it was in that particular panel there where Leviathan says, okay, phones, you know what to do. So, but the way it's kind of structured or composed in the panel, that phones is right up in the foreground.
Yeah.
So we know that Leviathan's, you know, we know who's talking to who, and even though uniform-wise they look identical.
The fuel ignites as expected and burns the junks and the boom net down. Q-Force are able to make their escape, and the resulting fireball makes the locals believe that someone disturbed the dragon and it breathed fire on them. Also, how did the swordfish not get burned to in that entire scenario? Like, there must have been the most fortunate release of petrol ever.
Yeah, I mean, there is no real answer for that. We do see it sailing out from amidst the rocks, you know, and that there's fire all around it.
Yeah.
But the swordfish itself, you know, seems unscathed.
I suppose maybe the swordfish isn't made of wood, so therefore has probably got a bit more about it. It can move a bit faster on the water. It could probably get through the flames without causing too much damage. So there's probably a lot of that going on too. But obviously the boom net and the junks, they're going to go up in flames almost instantly, aren't they?
Maybe I'm imagining this, but I think I recall, you know, around back in that time period, you know, back in the 80s, that the junks sailing on the South China Sea were actually notoriously, you know, they were very, very unsafe vessels to be on.
Sure.
And so that they were prone to fire.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and obviously sinking and damaging, you know, very, very easily. So in this particular case, while they might have provided a really great disguise for the Red Shadows, they were just really dangerous craft to be on board.
Yeah, like, I feel like the Red Shadows have been quite unlucky at times, you know, that, and we'll see in the next issue as well how unlucky they are in that kind of story. But yeah, the fact that, you know, they've done what they need to do, they've got the element of surprise, they hit the ambush, there's only three of them they've got to deal with, but McLaren's already diving at that point, he's already underwater, he's already finding a way to battle the fight above, because they're communicating via radio, so they know, he knows that there's a battle going on upstairs, I should say, upstairs. But then, you know, like, I feel like they're really unfortunate in that McLaren finds this tanker and uses the fuel, which, you know, again, the valves rusted shut. Who'd have thought he could move that? And then the frogmen go underneath just to make sure, and they get taken out by it. They can't penetrate McLaren's helmet. So, yeah. I know, I just find that, yeah, all very unfortunate circumstances. But then you think the frogmen probably should have been able to deal with him under there, shouldn't they?
I mean, I suppose, you know, they're going at him with knives, and yeah, you've got to just assume that, like, he's got a big helmet, it's very hard, and they're not going to be able to get pierce that with their, you know, feeble blades, you know?
Penis. Yeah, definitely penis. I love the fact that locals default to believing in dragons immediately, rather than thinking, oh, maybe something more sinister is occurring. It's like, no,
environmental catastrophe.
No, it's dragons, mate. Definitely dragons. And we get a Wilhelm scream right at the end. A tiny, tiny little one.
Where is that? I can't see that.
It's the local responding to the explosion or to the flames. And it's like, I see. It's brilliant. So it's like an AIE. It's just there. It's like enough for me to say, yeah, that's the Wilhelm scream in this issue.
The issue concludes with Leviathan reflecting on the Red Shadow's return by leading into the last mini issue when he says, "It means all Action Force teams are targets, wherever they are, on land, sea, and in the air, even in space."
A clear lead-in to the Space Force issue. But I enjoyed this one. I thought Q-Force, they don't always get like a ton of stories, but they're always really cool. And this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the toys, some of the best designs came with the Q-Force faction in terms of the vehicles and you know, some of the characters. But particularly this work here, Patrick Kennedy earlier, was Ian Kennedy is the artist.
Oh, right.
This is Ian Kennedy's work. This is beautiful work. And this last panel of Leviathan, you know, obviously below decks on the Swordfish, and you've got these control panels in behind him. That's a magnificent piece of art right there.
Yeah, it's fun. Really cool. Really cool.
You know, I think he does a lot with the artist does a lot with these kind of, you know, very similar looking characters to sort of differentiate them, make them look visually interesting. And you've got the beautiful Swordfish in the middle of all that. It's a great story. I think it's one of the better stories in terms of how the Red Shadows are represented, and I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, totally. I mean, again, we saw the use of the junks and the boom net that kept it low tech. It forced Q-Force to adapt to the situation. We see a really capable and confident commander in Leviathan, who is the reason for their escape, albeit a very non-eco-friendly one, but still gets them out there and into safety. And also, I'd probably be remiss not to talk about the covers involved in this one. Because again,
yes,
we get this mini comic is presented with Battle Issue 434. And that is just bonkers. It's like this alien Earth doomed spooks takeover invasion 1984. It's got like this weird alien creature with a skull, almost like it looks like Skeletor. Or like, what's his name? The Space Rangers bad guy from Action Man.
Darklon? No.
No, what's his bloody name? I've completely forgotten it.
While you're Googling that, I'm going to vamp here for a little bit. That cover features yet one of the spooks from the classic story Invasion 1984, written by John Wagner, and Eric Bradbury is the artist for that particular cover. One of the greats. The great artists that would have worked at IPC Comics back in the day. And there is an Action Force story that features Eric Bradbury's work, codenamed Stakeout, which we will definitely get to at some stage on our journeys through these comics. But that's a beautiful cover. I think that particular image was reused as well for the trade paperback for Invasion 1984 that Rebellion Comics released last year, featured this particular image in the trade paperback for that story, which is well worth picking up.
It's Captain Zargon, was what I was trying to think of.
Ah, Captain Zargon,
I feel
yes.
bad because I had Captain Zargon as a kid and absolutely adored it. But yes, totally agree. That cover is fantastic and really cool. But then obviously we're looking at the mini comic issue 4 as well, and that cover, that's like a lot of fun, but it makes McLaren look like he's got a jetpack on and he's flying through the air.
It does, yeah, he's flying through the air. So
I know the bubbles kind of take it away from that, but it still looks a little bit like flying, doesn't it?
It totally looks like he's flying, dude. But again, I'm going with Ian Kennedy as the artist here, and you know, you can't say anything bad about Ian Kennedy because he's like one of the greats of, he is the greatest artist probably of that time. And he looks like he's the Rocket Man for sure.
Well, that brings us again to the end of another episode of Disorder of Battle. Brian, thank you once again for getting through this Q-Force one. The next up, we've got Space Force. Are you excited for that?
Oh, cannot wait. Let you in on a little secret here. When I was a kid, my nickname was Space Commander.
Really?
I'll tell you that story another time as to how I got that name.
Well, perfectly
not,
for the next,
what you would think.
For the next episode, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, dude, thank you so much for jumping on. Really appreciate it.
I absolutely loved it. Thank you, buddy.
That's it for this rather mini installment of Disorder of Battle. Thank you to my co-host, Brian Hickey, and to our sponsors, Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. See you next time. And as always, Q-Force. Blood for the Baron. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/The Full Force. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/The Full Force Podcast or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. Located at 46 Bolton Street, Inns Quay, Dublin 1, Ireland, you can visit their website at dublincitycomics.ie and on Facebook at facebook.com/DublinCityComics.